The clanging of the school bell echoes in the bathroom as the last stragglers exit, slamming the cubicle doors in their rush to get to class on time. Last-minute glances in the mirror, snickers, and catcalls echo as girls exit, running into the hall. As their rapid footsteps fade, the quiet drip, drip, drip of the faucet is the only sound in the school bathroom. A hushed silence descends, and a solitary adolescent girl stands in front of the bathroom mirror, girding herself for the next steps of her invocation. She turns on the tap, turns it off. Once, twice, three times. She turns to flick the light. Again, once, twice, three times. Staring into the mirror, she builds up her courage and says aloud the name thundering in her head.
Loida do banheiro!
Loida do banheiro!
Loida do banheiro!
Loida do banheiro!
Have you ever taken a dare in a dark room, invoking a spirit's name before a mirror? Or been in an empty school bathroom and felt you were being watched? Have you ever feared to venture on campus at night because of the stories that students tell? Or perhaps you've wondered about the dark realities that feed legends. My name is Allie Miles, and I want to take you on a strange journey through things that go bump in the noche. True crime, urban legends, supernatural phenomena, the paranormal, and other weirdness from Latin America and the Latinx diaspora. Don't worry if you don't know Spanish or Portuguese. I'm here to dive into the research and curate the scariest and strangest tales you have probably never heard of. But don't think that just because you haven't heard them before,
they won't
haunt you.
Haunt you.
Our next story comes from Brazil in South America. Disfruten a loira do banheiro, the blonde in the bathroom. Enjoy. Every teenager in Brazil has heard the story of a loira do banheiro, or the blonde in the bathroom. Sometimes she is known as Mulher do Algodão, or the woman with cotton, or even Big Loira. By any name, she is the spirit that appears in school bathrooms after someone completes a ritual sequence of predetermined actions, calling her name three times in front of the mirror, flushing three hairs down the toilet, shouting curse words three times, turning the faucet on and off three times, turning the lights on and off three times. The actions may sound significantly like the Anglo-Saxon Bloody Mary ritual, invoking a spirit through a mirror by calling her name three times, a frequent dare between youths. A loira do banheiro,
also shares similarities with the Japanese bathroom ghost, Toire no Hanako-san. Hanako-san, like the Loira, is a schoolgirl whose spirit jumps out and pursues those foolhardy enough to summon her in her haunted space. The girl's restroom. But although there are similarities, a Loira do Banheiro is uniquely Brazilian.
But how did this ghostly co-ed summoning ritual begin? How did the blonde in the bathroom, a Loira do Banheiro, become a household name throughout Brazil? She's in children's cartoons, like Historietas Assombradas para Crianças Malcriadas, nationally beloved comics like Monica, and even a recent ad campaign for Netflix. A Loira do Spoiler. She's part of Brazilian culture. On YouTube, more than half the videos are pranks done by children, teens, and even TV channels. But although the ghost story is used humorously many times, it was a central fear for generations of students. Directors have crafted horror films like As Fábulas Negras that include the Loira do Banheiro, keeping her story alive in the collective unconscious. Even the pranks display an element of fear, because those pranked react to the apparent appearance of the ghost. She has different origin stories, but there is a common saying about her.
Eu não creio na Loira do Banheiro, mas que ela existe, existe. I don't believe in the blonde in the bathroom, but that she exists, she exists.
Quando eu fui estudar com 7 anos nessa escola normal, depois instituto.
When I went to study as a 7-year-old child in that school, later named the Institute, on the first day of school, during recess, a school employee, Doña Lili, told us children about the presence of Maria Augusta in the school.
Teresa Maia, professor of Brazilian culture, folklore, and museology from the University of São Paulo, director of the Frei Galvão Museum. One of the oldest origin stories of a Loira do Banheiro, or Mulher do Algodão, begins in the 19th century during the Império do Brasil, or Empire of Brazil. When the Portuguese royal family fled Europe in 1808, as Napoleon advanced, Prince Regent João, later King João VI, or Dom João in Portuguese, made the colony of Brazil the seat of the monarchy, with its capital in Rio de Janeiro. Dom João immediately began modernizing both Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo, and increasing commerce from Brazil to Great Britain and other parts of the world. In 1815, Brazil was elevated from a mere colony to a kingdom and became part of the United Kingdom of Portugal, Brazil, and the Algarves, which Dom João VI ruled. After 13 years in Brazil, Dom João left his son and heir, Dom Pedro, as regent when the court returned to Portugal in 1821. By 1822, Dom Pedro embraced the Brazilian independence movement and was acclaimed Emperor of Brazil by the end of the year. During this time, it was not unusual for new titles of nobility to be granted and even purchased in the new empire. This was how wealthy landowner and coffee merchant Francisco de Assis e Oliveira Borges became the first and only Viscount of Guarachingueta in 1871. And it is his young daughter, Maria Augusta de Oliveira Borges, who is the inspiration for A Loira do Banheiro. Maria Augusta was born on December 31st, 1864, in Guaratinguetá, in the Paraíba Valley, a region midway between the two cities of São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, approximately 65 kilometers or 40 miles from the Atlantic coast. She was the daughter of the prolific Viscount of Guaratinguetá and his second wife, Amélia Augusta Casal, a woman of Portuguese-Swiss descent. Maria Augusta was the 20th of 24 children, with 14 siblings from her father's first marriage, 3 from his mistress, and 7 from marriage to her mother, Amélia. Maria Augusta had a very privileged upbringing. According to a noted lawyer and journalist of the time, her father was the richest man in Brazil, a coffee baron with assets valued at more than 1% of total Brazilian currency in circulation. He owned many plantations, one of which, Faenza Fortaleza in Piquete, about 27 kilometers away from Guaratinguetá, was their largest and utilized the forced labor of over 168 slaves. Even though slavery in Brazil was officially abolished in 1888, coffee and sugar farmers relied on the labor of slaves and freedmen to amass their fortunes prior to that. Maria Augusta's family was also well connected to the imperial family of the second emperor of Brazil, Dom Pedro II. When Maria Augusta was 4 years old, they hosted a ball in honor of the Conde d'Eu and his wife, the imperial princess Isabel, daughter of Dom Pedro II. In August 1878, Dom Pedro II himself and Empress Teresa Cristina visited the Viscount of Guaratinguetá. The Viscount held personal and social authority and power over the generations of family members that lived with him. Social tradition for the upper class at the time was a joint family system in which many of the Viscount's children and their spouses, as well as their children, would live on the same property, all of them under his auspices. He also purchased homes near his own mansion for his daughters and sons-in-law, a benefactor even to those who did not remain technically under his roof. In addition to their multiple plantations, by 1864, the Oliveira Borges family had a palatial mansion in the center of Guaratinguetá, on a large stretch of land next to Igreja Nossa Senhora do Rosário dos Pretos. Women, during this time, were raised to be submissive, subordinate to males. Their only authority was inside the household. Outside, they were their husband's shadow. In fact, in 1827, a law was passed that limited women's education solely to Portuguese language, arithmetic, religion, and the domestic arts. After all, a girl's education was to ensure she would marry well, where her father instructed. It was meant to prepare her to be a good hostess for her spouse. Maria Augusta, however, was known to have a strong temperament, even though she had received her early education from a priest, Father Monte Carmelo, who lived in the household. Surely he had taught her the rightful place of a young woman in a patriarchal Catholic household in the 1800s. Apparently, Maria Augusta was headstrong and wanted a fuller, more exciting life. But she was young, female, beautiful, blonde, and duty-bound to her father. That is how, armed with a large dowry, at the age of 14, Maria Augusta's marriage was arranged to an influential 35-year-old lawyer, Francisco Antonio Dutra Rodriguez, a man 21 years her senior. Even in 1878, it's more than certain that a young teen would not be thrilled by a groom more than twice her age, no matter how well respected he was. Professor Dutra Rodriguez was a very highly regarded imperial counselor. He was so influential that later in his life, he became president of the province of Sao Paulo, which today is equivalent to governor of the state. Maria Augusta and her husband moved to Sao Paulo after their wedding, where he worked as a professor in the Largo de San Francisco Law School. Maria Augusta did not settle in well to the life of a sedate lawyer's wife. Dutra Rodriguez was known as a scholar, a man who lived and breathed the law. She was a young noblewoman who had traveled to Rio de Janeiro and Paris and seen the sights offered in more cosmopolitan cities of the time. She enjoyed parties, high society, and all its entertainments. She struggled against the constraints of the life her father, who died shortly after her marriage, had chosen for her. In March 1884, 6 years into her marriage, Maria Augusta had had enough. At 20 years old, she took all her jewelry and ran away, saying that she would never return. She fled initially to Rio de Janeiro, taking up a posh residence on Rua Taylor, and refused to return to her husband's house. Her widowed mother traveled to Rio de Janeiro to attempt a reconciliation between the couple. When this failed, Dutra Rodriguez seemed to anticipate that she would return eventually, and he set Maria Augusta up very comfortably with a stipend of 500,000 reais. This was equivalent to about a half kilogram of 24-karat gold per month. To put this into perspective also, the highest monthly salary in Brazil at the time was 300,000 reais. She was quite comfortable with her stipend. Shortly thereafter, she moved to Paris, where it was speculated that she continued an affair with the Count of Figueiredo, a wealthy and influential Brazilian noble. There are newspaper reports of the time describing how well-received she was in French society, going to balls and fêtes. She participated in the Battle of the Flowers in Nice, were gowned in a gorgeous violet dress trimmed with flowers. She rode a carriage and horses decked with violets and threw the flowers to the crowd, winning first prize. She lived life fully and enthusiastically, continuing to ask for a divorce from Dutra Rodriguez, until finally, in 1886, he acceded, and her marriage was annulled. She was finally free and remained in Paris. Dutra Rodriguez died 2 years later in Sao Paulo. Maria Augusta enjoyed life in France. But life in the City of Lights was not without its dangers. In 1891, she became ill, fighting a high fever. Her illness was believed to be caused by rabies, a disease that to date remains the most lethal, infectious disease known to humans. It attacks the central nervous system, usually entering through an open wound, most likely a bite, and travels along the nerve tissue to the brain. The incubation period for rabies is usually between 4 to 8 weeks. The initial symptoms feature fever, headache, nausea, vomiting, and malaise. Those are then followed by excitation and agitation as it begins its encephalitic stage. Confusion, hallucinations, aberrant, bizarre thought processes, aggressiveness, as well as seizures and muscle spasms are also present. Hyperesthesia, or excessive sensitivity of the skin because of the nerve damage, and hydrophobia, an extreme fear of water, are common in humans with rabies. Shortly after these symptoms appeared, death would follow. It was a horrible, painful way to die. Dr. Frédet, an assistant professor and officier de l'instruction publique, or officer of public instruction, described a rabies patient in 1886 during a lecture.
The wretched victim attacks his surroundings. Lunging at things, he crushes them, breaks them into 1,000 pieces. He beats his head against the wall as if to split it open. He bites himself, seizing the flesh of his arms and the hands in his teeth. He devours himself.
In the end, Maria Augusta outran her disastrous arranged marriage, but could not outrun an early death. She died on April 22nd, 1891, at the age of 26, in her home on Rue Alphonse de Neuville. When her mother heard the news, she was grief-stricken and made all haste to have her daughter embalmed and sent back to Guarachingueta. Her body, dressed in white and with her ears, mouth, and nostrils plugged with cotton, was put on a ship bound for Brazil. As was customary at the time, her jewels were put inside the casket with her, along with her death certificate. Sadly, when she arrived, her body had been disturbed, and all the papers and belongings in the coffin were never seen again. Relieved to at least have her child returned, Maria Augusta's mother took her body to her childhood home to await burial in a mausoleum that was being built for her in nearby Cementerio dos Passos. In the meantime, Amelia had her daughter placed in a glass casket in the living room of the mansion. A crown of golden flowers and Maria Augusta's golden hair was placed near her. And in the windows, along with black curtains and candles, the house was swathed in mourning. Maria Isabella Maya Fabiano, a descendant of the Oliveira Borges, tells her aunt's tale of the vigil.
Então chegou o corpo de Maria Augusta e a viscondessa chorando com o corpo ali no salão de visitas.
Placed the body of Maria Augusta in the visitor's salon, and all her friends, including my aunt Rosita, her family member, who told me the entire story of Maria Augusta, were there by candlelight, in vigil. Once the mausoleum was complete, Amelia refused to have her daughter buried. In her grief, she kept Maria Augusta in the house near her. But Amelia began to have recurring nightmares where Maria Augusta begged to be given a proper Christian burial. People in the house began to have sightings of a ghostly figure of Maria Augusta as well. In 1893, 2 years after her death, Maria Augusta's older sister, Maria Amelia, who was pregnant at the time, had a miscarriage and lay in bed with a high postpartum fever. Carlos Eugenio Marcondes de Moura, a descendant of the Viscount and a noted Brazilian historian and sociologist, and a Guggenheim fellow, wrote the following. One afternoon, Aunt Maria Amelia, Miquina, who had suffered a miscarriage and was very febrile, saw an intense luminosity envelop the alcove by her room. And Maria Augusta got up from her coffin, heading toward her. "I'm suffering, and I am not a saint to remain in the glass dome. I want to be buried," she entreated her sister. Greatly astounded and distressed, Aunt Miquina got worse and died a few hours later.
Teresa Maya, also a descendant, confirms this.
It happens that Maria Augusta appeared one day to her sister, saying that she wanted to be buried. She didn't want to be displayed anymore. So they took her body to the cemetery. But her soul stayed.
Ghostly visitations continued after this family tragedy occurred, until Amelia took them and the dreams as signs from Maria Augusta, and consented to move her body to her crypt in Cementerio dos Pasos. 5 years later, in 1896, Amelia died and joined her daughters in the cemetery. The same year Maria Augusta died, the Brazilian monarchy was overthrown by a military coup. After her mother's death, the palatial Oliveira Borges mansion was sold to the government of São Paulo. By 1902, it was converted into a school named Escola Complementar do Guaratinguetá. Shortly after it opened for classes, pupils and staff began reporting sightings of a ghostly blonde figure, a woman whose ears and nose were stuffed with cotton. She appeared frequently in the bathrooms of the school, turning the taps on in the dark and begging the individuals she encountered for water. Recognized as the Viscount's daughter, people recalled that Maria Augusta had died of rabies and assumed that she wandered the halls of her childhood home, dying of thirst, yet deathly afraid of drinking any water. The sightings continued until a mysterious fire burned the mansion down
in 1916. Testimonies of the time stated that when townspeople rushed to put out the fire, a haunting tune was playing on the piano inside the house. A piano that was Maria Gusta's favorite instrument. Surprisingly, according to a deposition taken during the arson investigation, that instrument survived the fire. It currently sits in the amphitheater of the rebuilt school. A citizen of Guarachingueta, Brito Broca, wrote in his memoirs published in 1968. For a whole day, the estate burned. I went to see it several times, watching the legendary old palace of the Viscount of Guarachingueta transformed into ruins. Of course, there were superstitious people who claimed that the building had a sinister destiny. They said it was haunted. The soul of the Viscount's daughter, who perished in Europe, wandered through the corridors, as claimed by the night owls who walked around the area. All the old mansions have similar somber legends. With her home destroyed, Maria Gusta's spirit was seen more frequently. When the school was rebuilt and renamed Escola Estadual Conselheiro Rodríguez Alves, or Counselor Rodríguez Alves State School, the hauntings were seen by staff and students again. Teresa Maya also recounts.
Ela apareceu já nos escombros, andando de branco e percorrendo o que sobrou da casa.
She appeared in the ashes, dressed in white, picking up what was left of her house. Since that time, the apparitions have been repeated, with the ghost turning on the faucets of sinks at night. And since it is said that she died with a very high fever.
The night watchmen attributed actions during their shifts to a ghost who they identified by the smell of her rose perfume, said to be Maria Gusta's favorite. Doña Cecilia Verza, a retired school official, recounts.
No instituto eu trabalhei 25 anos. Eu vi Maria Augusta.
I worked in the Institute for 25 years, and I saw Maria Gusta in blood and bones, flesh and blood, personally. I was going up the pastor's stairs, and I called out, and she didn't respond.
She even recalled the first time she felt the ghostly presence.
Bom, a primeira experiência que eu tive sobre Maria Augusta foi o perfume.
The first experience I had with Maria Augusta was her very pleasant light perfume. A female student was heading from the classroom to the bathroom, and I was in the hallway with a colleague who was fixing the lock of a cabinet when the girl said, "Auntie, what a pleasant lady's perfume you're wearing." But I wasn't wearing any perfume.
Even some of the school administrators quip, "Maria Gusta está brincando." Maria Gusta is playing around. When the lights suddenly turn off or doors lock unexpectedly. Although not all staff members find these occurrences humorous. One of the directors got fed up with the tales of perfumes, lights turning on and off, faucets running, and held an all-staff meeting. In it, he criticized staff reactions and said that it was absurd that in the middle of the 20th century, people were telling ghost stories. He banged the table to punctuate his speech and...
At
that moment, a light falls from above onto the table.
That made believers out of those who doubted Maria Augusta's presence. Although teachers grew used to the occurrences, students became fearful of using the bathrooms or dared each other to contact Maria Augusta. Students developed rituals to try and invoke her spirit. A popular one was to throw blonde hair in the toilet and flush 3 times. Another was to call her name in front of a bathroom mirror on the premises, slam the bathroom door 3 times, swear out loud, kick the toilet bowl, and flush it. The story of Maria Augusta struck a chord in the Brazilian public. Eventually, appearances of a ghostly Loira do Banheiro began to spring up in various schools throughout Brazil. But the newer ones had their own origin stories, and some were far more gruesome. Join us for part 2 of our A Loira do Banheiro, The Blonde in the Bathroom, to hear those stories and how they arose from all corners of Brazil. Thank you again for spending your time with us at A Weird Latinx Podcast. We hope you liked our investigation into the famous stories of Brazil's school bathroom ghost and one of the dark histories. We pride ourselves in giving you not just the strange, but the story behind it. In the podcast notes are links to the resources in English, Spanish, and Portuguese if you would like to follow up. Many thanks to Documentario Maria Augusta, Mito e Lenda, and E Sonhar Está no Mapa, Episodio A Loira do Banheiro, by Reinaldo Montalvão, for the interviews with the people involved. You can find both on YouTube. Links to other resources can be found in the notes. And don't forget, if you or someone you know has experienced an unexplainable event that you'd like us to share on Weird Latinx Podcast, or know any tales you would like us to cover, please send us an email at weirdlatinx@gmail.com or drop us a comment at weirdlatinx.com. Or you can find us on Twitter at Weird Latinx. This again is Allie Miles wishing you a good night and spooky sueños.